point, and then, of course, a walk-off grand slam. Nats lose 11-10 after being up 9-1 in this game. One of the worst losses I've ever seen for any team, period. I mean, that's the type of thing you write movie scripts about, except a regular season baseball game is probably not good enough for, you know, a sports movie. But the actual script, I think AI couldn't have even written that. You know, honestly, you would have seen that and been like, nah, AI wrote this. This doesn't actually make sense. The Nats are down 9-1 in this game, and they just got walked off with a grand slam, 11-10. Oh, and I do want to point out, Wes Clark,
yes,
that you may be friends with a traitor, essentially.
He's not a traitor. I was, you know, I grew up with him. You know, your
teammates. Who did you grow up with? Say who it was.
Bryce Eldridge, who hit the grand slam for the for the Giants. Mm-hmm. Grew up a Nats fan. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I guess he's a traitor, but they pay him a lot of money to do that against the Nationals, so I don't blame him.
So you were teammates with him where?
I was teammates with him. We were little. We were teammates when we were little, and then we end up going to the same collegiate workout facility for about 5-6 years. We were in high school and stuff like that. And then I went to college. He's a little younger than me, but he got drafted. He was committed to Alabama when I was at Virginia Tech, doing some stuff there with the program. But and then he didn't even go to Alabama. He got drafted in the first round.
And the rest is history, right?
And here I am producing on radio.
Well, he's hitting walk-off grand slams, right?
In Major League Baseball.
Well, you know what? I think that makes him a traitor, especially if he's a Nats fan. He should have struck out of solidarity with the Nats.
Man, I'm going to text him. I'm going to say, dude, you could have helped me out and just got a single there.
Just to keep the game alive.
So right now.
Yeah, we don't want the Nats to lose this game. You don't want. I mean, come on. Even the post game show, they're like, we're going to just finish this up quick. I don't blame them. Right? It's just like you get to the point where you just say, you know what? We're done. Charlie and David, we're out of this. We have nothing to do with this. Look, this is still, I mean, look, the Nats overall this year, the 35-34 was a nice road trip. They got, Seattle on Friday, an off day tomorrow. You see this everywhere, right? Any sport, it's the same thing. You've got to be able to put these types of things behind you. And that's where the Nats have to be moving forward, is just forget that this thing happened. But look, the Nats are overachieving. We'll talk to Jake Hassan at 8 as well. And he covers Major League Baseball, so I already know. He did have some financial involvement in this game, though. He did text me before this, so I'll just.
Did he win?
I'll leave it. I'm just going to leave it at that. That's called a tease, my friend. I don't make it that simple. True. But there was an involvement in this game, and that last grand slam put him one way or the other, and that's all that I'll say. Right, but you know, look, the Nats are a team that's surprising a lot. Not a lot of expectations heading in this year. You just got to put this thing behind you. So, Nats fall 11-10. Jake Hassan coming up at 8, a little more Major League Baseball. And also the Bears. And will that Madden curse take over Caleb Williams this year? Patrick Mahomes did not have any sort of Madden curse whatsoever. I don't know if it's really actually how you segue to that, but we're just going to do it the best we can. You thought Patrick Mahomes was rich before. He just got another massive deal. And this is all that I will say because we're not at this point yet, but what I will at least point out, there's a certain quarterback in Washington right now that at least is looking at what quarterback deals look like, and the resume is nowhere near what Patrick Mahomes is, but we know these quarterback contracts get big, they're on steroids, and they continue to climb. Patrick Mahomes just reset the quarterback market again. Again, $64 million a year, a $504 million contract, and that's just the beginning of it, right? Because it can get to $522 million with incentives. It's new money because it is an extension, so it's like $239 or whatever it is for Mahomes. That starts in 2027, but $64 million a year. This is actually the third time in 6 years that Mahomes and the Chiefs have actually reset the quarterback market. It's, you know, they've been going through a lot of these different contracts, obviously, with him, and it's, you know, it's grown. They've added extensions. We know the first one was like $500 million, but not really, and now we've actually gotten to that point where, you know, it's real. The Chiefs have actually committed $689 million in new money to Patrick Mahomes all the way across the total from 2022 to now 2033. Those are massive numbers for a quarterback that, look, deserves it, despite what happened this year and the knee injury. And the bigger issue is obviously that they just didn't have enough weapons around them, and there was a certain point where, look, the Chiefs got cocky. The Chiefs got cocky and said, we've got Mahomes. We don't really need to add a lot else. We got Travis Kelce, and we'll figure out the rest at wide receiver. And Rashee Rice, when he's available and not in trouble, we know what he can do on the field. And you saw that catch up to them over time. And look, the Chiefs were out of the playoff picture even before the knee injury for Patrick Mahomes. It was a bad year all around for Kansas City. But, of course, you're going to lock up your quarterback. Of course, you're going to give him a deal like this because it is Patrick Mahomes. I don't need to sit here and give you the resume. I don't need to sit here and tell you anything beyond that. But what I can say is that, no, Jaden Daniels is nowhere near this. And, no, Jaden Daniels is not in a spot where he can say, hey, I want that contract. But where are we a couple of years from now? Again, even if Jaden Daniels wins two Super Bowls over the next 2 years, by the way, he's eligible for an extension after this season. Now, there's obviously estimates that are thrown around out there, and Spotrac, I've said it like three different ways. Everybody says it a bunch of different ways, but they're sort of the premier when it comes to, you know, where contracts are, contract information in sports, all those different things. They projected that Jaden Daniels' market value was around $53 million a year. And that number is going to rocket if he has a monster 2026 season. Now, that's a situation, if you're the Commanders, it's the best position to be in, right? You're like, well, we got to pay our quarterback. I think we'll live because he's actually worthy of this. It's not, you don't want to be in one of those situations where you're right in the middle, right? Where it's the Texans and C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young and the Panthers. Or, I mean, you've had these conversations about quarterbacks so many times, right? The Commanders want to be in that spot where it's a great problem to have. We got to pay our quarterback a lot of money. Jaden Daniels, in his, you know, at least looking ahead and looking up at that deal going, how can I target that? How close can I get to that? Now, do I think that to this day and moving forward every day, he's thinking, how can I get $64 million a year? How can I get 60? No, that's not. I think I'm not going out on a limb when I say that's not how Jaden Daniels operates. But don't think that that's not a thought. Don't think that that's not a thought for every young quarterback. I mean, it's not Jaden Daniels. It's Drake May. It's Caleb Williams, who, of course, is on the cover of Madden, so he's probably now going to have a horrible season because that Madden curse is pretty much undefeated at this point. But realistically, this is something that Jaden Daniels will at least be thinking about. And that extension talk will start after this season. And that's what makes this year so important for a quarterback that had a great rookie season, really a historic rookie season, and then completely disappeared and was injured the entire time his sophomore year, sophomore slump, whatever you want to call it. Like, that was real, and it happened. That's what makes 2026 so important for Jaden Daniels, for the Commanders, for David Blough, a rookie offensive coordinator, for Terry McLaurin, for everybody else involved, just in that offense alone, let alone Dan Quinn and everybody else. There's a whole list of people that have a lot of pressure on them with the Commanders heading into 2026, but you know, the quarterback is where everything starts. The quarterback is where everybody's focus is first. So, when you look at what other quarterback deals are becoming, now, we could be talking $300 million for Jaden Daniels. Let's just say high end here, probably closer to like a $300 million contract. If Jaden Daniels has a year, let's just use the baseline, all right? Jaden Daniels has a 2026 season that's similar, at least in his own performance, to where he was his rookie year. Relatively healthy, banged up. You know, he had missed a little bit of time because he was hurt, but it was nothing astronomical like it was last year. So let's say that. The numbers are similar. At that point, if you're the Commanders, you start talking extension and you try pushing it then, because it's only going to get more expensive. And I know this sounds like, oh, Nick, it's way down the road. It's not. Like, this isn't. Teams have to start thinking about this way ahead of schedule. And the teams that always drag out the contract negotiations, especially with quarterbacks, always end up paying more. It never gets cheaper, okay? It's like the cost of living in this country. It will not get cheaper. Nothing does. Gas isn't going to get cheaper. Well, maybe a little bit over time, but let's be honest. It fluctuates. The housing market, everything overall is still getting more expensive. And it's the same thing with quarterbacks. So if you're the Commanders, you would rather pay $310 million and however much of it is actually guaranteed than $410 million if you wait another season. Now, Jaden Daniels has to want to sign it. He also has to have a good year this year. And I know I'm going multiple steps ahead. But the Commanders, Adam Peters, everybody else has to be thinking about just that. They have to be thinking about what this contract is going to look like. It's not going to be $500 million like it was for Patrick Mahomes. Remember, Patrick Mahomes' first contract that was, I'm putting it in quotes, right, $500 million. It wasn't really. That was after winning a Super Bowl, an MVP his second year in the league. Like, he'd already had that on his resume. Now, if Jaden Daniels wins the Super Bowl and an MVP this year, because look, I know it sounds crazy, and I don't think the Commanders are going to do that, but what I am saying is that we also didn't expect him to win 12 games in 2024 and go to an NFC Championship game, and that happened. So if you're able to get one of those similar situations and the Commanders, yeah, Jaden Daniels wins an MVP and they at least go to the Super Bowl, that price tag goes up. Like, it goes up fast with quarterbacks. And yes, that's a position that you want to be in. But if you're the Commanders, you got to start thinking about this now. And it is going to be a conversation. And I'm telling you now, I've been saying this since last season, because I can see a calendar. It's not like I'm the only person that sees this. The front office has it too. But this is going to be a discussion the entire season around Jaden Daniels. And this is the world we live in, right? Instant reaction, social media, constant just living in the moment. Sometimes living in the moment's good. Sometimes living in the moment's a little bit much. We are going to be living in the moment with Jaden Daniels and how he plays week after week after week. Was it Terry McLaurin's fault that they didn't win that game? Was it Jaden Daniels? Was it the play calling? Jaden Daniels, you know, he's up for a contract and go, you know, extension coming up soon. Got to think about that. What's the value of that going to be? And the one thing I've noticed is that when money starts getting really, really big around an athlete that everybody loves in this city, people start to nitpick, and sometimes there's a lot of venom. Because I think back to Bryce Harper and how people loved him in D.C. until we were talking $300 million contract, and he was still with the Nats. And then it was, oh, pff, I haven't seen 50 home runs from him yet. Oh, did you see what happened in that game? Bryce isn't worth it. And then Juan Soto came onto the scene. I remember saying on this station years ago then, I was like, Juan Soto just made Bryce Harper expendable. $300 million wasn't enough for him. We know he left. We know the whole story. But I will never forget how fans started to view Bryce Harper with all of the money that was being talked about. And you've seen this story all across, you know, all sports, right? I mean, there's players in the NBA are the same way. That was like, you know, Joe Johnson, when he got his first big deal, went from most underrated player in the NBA, I'll never forget it, to like, oh, he's way overpaid. And that was like a six-year, $120 million deal back in 2010. Tobias Harris is another name that pops in my head. Like, this guy's so underrated. The Sixers gave him $180 million. I mean, this is, again, there's a million of these ideas, a million of these situations, but it happens. The minute you start talking about big-time money for somebody, that big deal, it's now earn it, and earn it every single day, every single week, every single game, without failure. Those are going to be the expectations on Jaden Daniels in this pivotal year three. Now, whether that's fair or not, that's going to be the reality. Do I think that that's going to affect him mentally? He seems like he's got a pretty good head on his shoulders. He seems like he's pretty mature and focused, and, you know, most of the time deals with adversity well. I mean, the one time we really saw it where it didn't feel like that was happening was, you know, the Seattle game right before he got hurt. They had nobody left. Remember, they got to a point where you weren't seeing Jaden Daniels smile after a mistake. He started slamming the football down and getting pissed off, and you went, oh, we've turned a corner here. He is, and again, he had nobody to throw the football at that point. He was back from, I can't even remember which injury it was at that point. It was right before the elbow. And you just get to a point where you're like, what's he going to do? What is Jaden Daniels going to do at this point? But you are now in a year where the expectations are no longer just rebuild. It's show progress. It's live up to the expectations that were placed on you after your rookie year. And do I think he's up for it? Yeah, absolutely, I do. But you still have to get those, you still have to get the actual results on the field. Now, again, it's a situation that everybody wants to be in, right? We all hope that it's a no-brainer that the Commanders sign Jaden Daniels to a massive contract. That's what everybody hopes. And yeah, you all hope that there's plenty of cap space left to build around him. But this is also why teams spend money when quarterbacks have those rookie deals, and they don't kick in until a little bit later with those extensions, so you can try to maximize that as much as you can. That's what I've been saying already. Like, they've had to think ahead already. Laremy Tunsil, you knew, was due. They paid him. There's other players that are going to be coming up that you're going to have to deal with from a franchise perspective? That are they going to be a part of this? Are we going to pay them? Are we going to let them go? That's why drafting well is really, really important, because if you don't draft well, you can't fill those holes with younger players on rookie contracts that can then contribute and exceed what their salary hit actually is, right? Like, if you don't get to that point, and it's like, we either got to pay guys that have already had success in the NFL because we can't draft, well, then you're screwed. Your roster is going to be imbalanced because you don't have enough that's there. But I'd rather be in the position of, hey, we know our quarterback's getting paid. Hey, we know it's going to be a lot of money, than, I don't know, Wes, your Texans, where it's like, what is C.J. Stroud going to get?
That's a great question.
What is C.J. Stroud going to get?
And you're talking...
Like, what is the conversation around them? Because, like, that seriously, they are in limbo right now with what happened in the playoffs, and now it's becoming a conversation about his extension.
Yeah, but how many quarterbacks, when with three straight years, the first 3 years of their career, they win 10-plus games? I mean,
right.
How many quarterbacks do that?
He's had a lot of success, but he's also got an elite defense there, and it's a bad taste left in everybody's mouth from what happened in the playoffs with C.J. Stroud. And they're a bit – listen, don't get me wrong.
Like, stats in the wild card. I mean, he's in three games, he's passed for 800 yards in the first round of playoffs.
So what do you think – you're a Texans fan. You've heard – like, have you heard any numbers thrown around as to what his deal could look like?
I haven't, actually.
Okay. Because I'm curious of what's being said around that.
To be honest with you, it's all – you know – the defensive players have been getting the contracts.
Right. And rightfully so. That defense
Will Anderson
is elite.
Just got a blockbuster salary increase. Like, it's all that. It hasn't been about CJ. I mean, what is it right now? Around 40 mil? What does Dak get? 50?
Dak's at like 60 now, I think.
Okay. So I would think that CJ probably gets 50, 48 around there. That's what I'm guessing.
I mean, look, they're going to pay him, right? We know that. Like, they're not going to go,
you're not going to let him.
Play
Davis Mills?
Right, right.
He's good. Like, I really like Davis Mills. He helped us in the three-game stretch. When
he stuck
CJ
his neck
was,
out for that team,
but
didn't
Davis
he?
Davis Mills, he did. I mean, he really did. He came back against the Jags. And I had a funny joke right there. But I was at the Chiefs-Texans game, and the reason why they won that game is because of CJ. The same thing against the Bills. You know, he's the one that's extending play. So you have to pay him.
So the current contracts now in the NFL, you gave me time to get the numbers in front of me. Thank you. Patrick Mahomes is at the top right now. $504 million is the extension total. Spotrac, whatever, has it at $63 million is average annual value. The next closest is Josh Allen, $55 million a year, along with Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, who did just rework his contract. Brock Purdy's in at 53, Justin Herbert at 52, Lamar Jackson 52, Jalen Hurts 51. Dak Prescott is actually in there at 60 as well. That was ordered by total contract first. So you got Mahomes at 63, Dak 60, Stafford, Jordan Love, Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, all at 55, with Goff and Purdy at 53, Justin Herbert at 52. Lamar Jackson 52, and then 51 for Jalen Hurts.
I found CJ's projected. It's 51. It's 51.6.
Yeah, I think you're going to find him somewhere in that mix, because here's where you start going down, right? I would pay him more than Jalen Hurts. Like, that's going to be the argument. Look at what he's been as a quarterback over Jalen Hurts. Now, the other argument is, well, Jalen Hurts won a Super Bowl. My counter to that, if I'm representing C.J. Stroud, is, yeah, but who would you rather have at quarterback? You're not going to trade C.J. Stroud for Jalen Hurts. Like, that's a simple argument that you just make right there alone. You know, I think you're probably looking at a $50 million a year contract for somebody like C.J. Stroud, which then, a year from now, again, if we're playing the speculation game, and again, that's what all this is, but if we're looking at that with somebody like Jaden Daniels, he's not going to be more than Mahomes. Let's just play the game even at high end. Let's say a wild thing happens, and the Commanders win the Super Bowl, and Jaden Daniels is MVP this year and Super Bowl MVP. I'm going to max this thing out.
I got a projection. You're talking about all those accolades.
Uh huh.
Why wouldn't he get 60 plus?
And that's what I'm saying. He would be at the Patrick Mahomes number if he's able to do that, because there'd be a recency bias that's there. And really, if you're the Commanders, you also know it's only going to get more expensive. Like, at that point. Because Mahomes got $500 million. That was $500 million was the first contract. Not totally guaranteed, but that first contract that he signed, after he won. You know, he'd already won a Super Bowl. He'd had the MVP under his belt, all that. They signed that extension the minute that they could. The Commanders would do the same thing. So, again, maxing out accolades for Jaden Daniels this year, we're talking probably matching Patrick Mahomes. But anything other than that, you know, again, if we'll use it as, it will use the ceiling as his rookie year. If he matches his rookie year, I mean, here's the thing,
if
though.
If he matches that, I mean, that's pretty good.
Right. Like, is he in at 60 then with Dak Prescott?
I was thinking 54 if he matches it, 55.
I feel like you're probably, because there's so many quarterbacks sitting at 55, including a Jordan Love and a Trevor Lawrence. Now, Joe Burrow's been to a Super Bowl and an AFC championship game. But because you've got...
Lawrence has played much better.
This past season, he absolutely did. Cohen may have gotten the best out of him. I think, though, you're probably going to see him... You're seeing Jaden Daniels, if he matches his rookie year this year, the number starts at $55 million a year.
Yeah.
Where Matt Stafford, Jordan Love, Trevor Lawrence, and Joe Burrow is.
I can get behind that, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, dude, you're talking about one win away from a Super Bowl, something that this city hasn't seen in years, decades.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Like, not just matching his individual stats, but the team as a whole wins 12 games again and goes to an NFC championship game. You're slotting in it. And you know what? They might even, honestly, they might even find ways to pay him more, you know, after a year or two and smooth it out. So it's like more guaranteed money.
Sure.
You know, that's kind of where, like, so, like, for example, if you're looking at guaranteed money, like, well, you know, the crazy thing is the most guaranteed obviously still is Deshaun Watson at $230 million.
Which is wild. We
know. Worst contract in NFL history. So, and let's throw that out.
I would quickly say that if I'm the Browns, I'm just going to start him for the year just to see if you can get your money's worth.
Yeah. Just, it looks like the Mahomes fully guaranteed money isn't really out, though. I'm not finding that. Or, like, what's guaranteed. Unless you can find that somewhere. But, I mean, Josh Allen's at 147, Burrow's at 146, Trevor Lawrence at 142, Lamar at 135. So, like, there's maybe a chance that if it's Jaden, he gets, like, $55 million a year and 175 guaranteed. You know, like, if he matches his rookie year this year. That's, you know, again, we're playing all of this in speculation, but, like, this is what is already being thought about, and it's been thought about.
If he matches rookie year, you're assuming there's going to be a Super Bowl appearance at some point.
Yes. And that's the thing, too, is you're also paying for what the potential is down the road as well. Because, again, it only gets more expensive. Now, here's the other caveat, though. If he decides he wants to, you know, hold out for more, it could be something that carries into next year. Like, he could have a great season this year. Jaden Daniels, again, let's say matches rookie year, similar situation. He could also then say, yeah, I'm going to wait another year. I'm going to bet on myself. If there's anybody that would be more of a bet on yourself type player, I think he would be that. But you have the injury risk. And because you already have a significantly shortened season on your resume in the NFL because of injuries, and they existed in college as well, I think that's probably a little less likely, and that would be something that's in his head. But it's really just a question of, you know, what does this season look like? If he's protected and the offensive line takes care of him and he stays relatively healthy, does he say, hey, I might wait a little bit longer? Again, there's a million different ways that this could go, but you're in a position now, if you are them, and the Commanders, to say, like, let's pay him as soon as we can if you're comfortable, because it's only going to get more expensive.
And can the organization spend money around him? You know, we talk about, last year, he wasn't protected. He might be this year, but will the front office invest in him? I mean, getting Stephon Diggs for $18 million that you've talked about, that's investing in Jaden Daniels as well.
It's, you know, there's only so much you can do when you're obviously paying a quarterback, right? Like, we know there's a salary cap. There's just, there are limits to it. But you do have a couple of years until that extension kicks in where you can still go down that road and build as best you can. And maybe there's a discussion about, like, hey, let's spread this money out a little bit more so we can have a little bit more space under the salary cap. It's going to keep going up. And the NFL is probably going to spike their salary cap soon anyway, because they're going to get more, like, they're going to get more TV contracts. They're going to opt out soon, and then they're going to get more money, and they're going to renegotiate probably with NBC for Sunday Night Football and just squeeze them for every cent they can.
Amazon's going to be a $2 billion deal.
And YouTube is going to be coming in looking for more. Netflix Peacock is going to be in for more. So,
NBC,
you know, yeah. So there's a million different ways that this could end up going, but it's going to be, It's going to be a long discussion for a long time, but we'll see. It's all speculation at this point now, but Patrick Mahomes resetting the quarterback market again today, $64 million a year. We got game four of the NBA Finals coming up in about 50 minutes. Jake Hassan joining us, talk about the Nats debacle today and a little bit of Caleb Williams and the rest of the NFC and what that could look like for this Commanders team and maybe their path to getting back to, you know, winning a playoff game or two at least as well. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. I'm at Nick Ashew on all the socials, and we got game four of the NBA Finals tonight. They canceled that block party outside of Madison Square Garden. James Dolan, the owner, saying, you're not doing it. That's a great way to make the fans like you more, though I will say the fights that were...
Unbelievable. Such a disappointment.
I mean, it's just... It's crazy, right? Because, like I remember back when the Caps won the Stanley Cup. And that was obviously when, you know, D.C. as a whole, we'd been just so desperate for winning. And the celebrations that were outside of Capital One Arena and, you know, all through it, let alone when the Caps actually won. I think, like, one person got arrested in the entire, like, celebration. Like, after, not the parade, I'm not talking anything like that. But, like, I will say this, D.C. knows how to party without getting arrested. It was a good. I was proud of the way that was celebrated. The fights with Knicks fans going after Spurs fans after Game Three.
They were slugging on them.
Like, what are you doing?
Ripping
what
their
are
jerseys
we
off.
Just.
It was. I'm sure you saw the video where the guy was bleeding out of his face.
Yes, and we see this all the time. But like, what it is it's dumb fans that are pissed off that the refs had a horrible game and the officials were a huge part of that game. And they're drunk. And they're like, yeah, I'm just going to go fight a Spurs fan. And I know we see this all the time with lots of fan bases. Dodgers fans doing this to Giants fans or Philadelphia fans across the board. Yes, it happens with lots of fan bases. It shouldn't happen with any fan bases. And I get it. People are stupid. And there's stupid people out there. And in the grand scheme of things, it's a small percentage. But look what they did. They ruined it for everybody else because you can't control everything. I know the mayor of New York said, like, they approved it outside of the, what it was like, a gathering of 500 to 999 people or whatever the permit was. Like, they allowed it, and then James Dolan was like, not doing it. But they ruined it for everybody else. Everybody else. Because absolutely. One of the really cool things about this whole Knicks run to the NBA Finals has been watching Knicks fans lose their mind. And look, there's a difference between, like, acting like an idiot and swarming J.R. Smith and obviously, even the next level, these fights that happen after that. But this is what happens when you win 13 straight games in the playoffs and everybody's just like, well, we're just going to win every single game. Knicks fans didn't know how to lose anymore. Just didn't know how to lose. But it was such a fun story for so long. Look, there's a difference between acting like a drunk idiot that's still under control, right? Like, I'm sure, Wes, you've got friends like that. Maybe you're that guy. Don't know. You don't have to say it on air, but I'm going to guess
you're
probably.
No, I'm not that guy. Where you can be, but I know your point where your friends are being kind of funny.
Yes, and people have those. Listen,
you're taking videos of them, but not this.
No, there's a difference between, like, Bing Bong and all that happened and, like, everybody just acting like like there's controlled idiocy, right? Knicks fans throughout the winning streak had controlled idiocy for the most part, where it was funny. You probably maybe don't want your boss seeing everything that you did, but it's not anything to get you arrested. It's just, like, maybe borderline obnoxious. Now it's gotten to the point where it's too much. And they ruined it for everybody else. And that's where we sit. Look, the Knicks went 13 straight games without a loss, playing a certain way, and that stopped in Game 3. And you know, I don't know whether they were jacked up because the fans were there and they were at home and there's all this, you know, spotlight on them and they win two games in San Antonio as underdogs. There's a lot of factors that go into it.
The Spurs played well.
They did play well, and so did the refs. The refs played well also as a part of the Spurs organization. Come on. You can't watch that game and not say... it was insane, some of the missed calls.
Here's the thing. Everyone sees the video of Wimby shoving Brunson, but I cannot tell you how many times Cat would shove him in the paint. Like, just going up court.
By his head?
And would push him.
By his head?
Upper chest.
That's not the same thing, dude. Grabbing somebody by the head in any way is a flagrant foul. It's a flagrant foul. The NBA, that is, you could go up for a layup and a guy accidentally hits you in the head and they will call a flagrant foul. Not all the time if it's incidental contact, but it is still in the category of a flagrant foul. And what about Stephon Castle barreling through Jalen Brunson and nothing was called there? And by the way, on that same play, if you look, there was another foul off the ball, the Victor Wembanyama and Jalen Brunson. There was another foul off the ball, the Spurs. I don't even remember who it was that was involved in it, but there was a lot of this. Here's what I'm going to say. Tonight is going to be a game where the refs are going to have to get this thing under control quickly because there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of venom right now, and this is starting to become a heated series. And competitive, heated, like, all that's great. The NBA's lacked that for a while. That's what I've loved about these NBA playoffs is you have had games that have been two teams that don't like each other. Like, you see it. It's no longer this, well, they played AAU and they're exchanging jerseys after the game and they all go to dinner and everybody's friends. You don't see that anymore. And that's good. It's good for the NBA within the right boundaries. You don't want to see fights in this, though I do think we're going to have a couple of fights. I set the total last night to 1.5 total fights in this, Wes, and I took the over. So did Metal Chris. 1.5 total fights.
Okay.
Would you take the over or the under in that?
No, I'm going to take the under.
All right, you're going to go under. So one fight or zero
fights?
I'm
just going to go one fight.
One fight, okay. I think there'll be two. Now, again, not just like a quick whistle and like legit, like got to break this thing up. Guys are in a scrum together.
Okay.
And again, it's an NBA fight, so it's not like we're talking, they're swinging at each other, it's standing and pushing, and, you know, the guys in high school and the teachers are holding them back and that type of thing.
Okay, that's the fight. Yeah, it's not hockey. You're not getting Wilson.
No.
Up in your grill.
No. NBA fights, not hockey fights. Those are two different categories. So you'd go
so
under.
So what I'm kind of hearing right now is that there's a possibility that game three was fixed.
I mean, how can you not sit there and watch the missed call after missed call? Not just in this game. Go back to San Antonio. I mean, first off, and luckily the NBA rescinded at least one thing, so it pulls something back. But that technical on Mitchell Robinson, when it was Mitchell Robinson and Wemby pushing back and forth on each other, and it was just Mitchell Robinson, you're like, what are you doing? Like, again, I know sometimes it's the guy that retaliates that gets it first, but it was actually Wemby did something after. Look, I could go all day with these kind of things. The point here is that the refs are going to have to tighten this game up no matter what. The spotlight is on them, and any time you have a series of this importance with the spotlight the way that it is, record ratings in these NBA finals, record ratings. The NBA is putting up monster ratings in these playoffs, period. It is massively popular what we've seen throughout this entire product in the NBA playoffs, not just the NBA finals, but the spotlight is brighter than it has been on the NBA in a long, long time. And when the officials are in that spotlight, when refs are the big part of the conversation, it's bad for the league. And there is going to, every little detail is going to be picked apart, right? I talk about, like, when we're talking about Bryce Harper and $300 million and how everybody started to pick apart every single game for him. Oh, he's not worth that. The spotlight is going to be just as bright, really brighter, on these refs and what they call and what they don't call. And look, they're not going to get everything right, and there are going to be some things that are borderline. But they can't miss the egregious situations because it's not even just about, like, fans' perspective. It's not even just about media's perspective. It's about what the players think. That if this, because here's what the Spurs are going to do in this game tonight. They're going to see where the line is and how far they can cross it. They're going to test it early. And if you don't establish where that hard stop is as a ref in this game tonight, it's going to get out of control, and it's a lot harder to rein a physical, heated game back in, especially of this magnitude, because this is pivotal. Going down 3-1 versus a series being 2-2, that's a massive difference for the Spurs. And they've now learned, okay, we can get in the Knicks' head. We played a lot more physical. It gave them more confidence. The Knicks now don't have the momentum. We have the momentum. And they're going to do everything they can to match what they did in Game 3. And if refs let that happen in this game, it's going to be a problem. And look, it's not like the Knicks played great basketball anyway. I mean, they were a disaster offensively. They had 18 assists in Game 3. That's the second lowest total across 99 regular season and playoff games all season. So not even just the entire season for the Knicks. The second lowest assist total in a game across the entire season. They had 13 turnovers. The Spurs scored 21 points off of them. Mikal Bridges was non-existent. Karl-Anthony Towns, with all the love. Look, I gave him the love in the first two games. I said, this guy, is the MVP of the finals through the first two games. He made life hell for Victor Wembanyama. He was the reason Wemby struggled so much in those first two games. Though, yes, he put up points, did put up numbers. He was wildly inefficient. He looked tired. He looked beat up. They couldn't figure out what to do with Wemby defensively because Cat was making it difficult because he was scoring and stretching the floor. And then it's like, well, do we keep Wemby roaming the baseline, or is he going to be somebody that goes out and actually defends, but then the rim is open? So all of that stuff, Karl Anthony Towns made it so difficult for the Spurs in the first two games. He was a nothing burger in Game 3. Landry Shamet, a guy that's a free agent this offseason, been great shooting from the outside all playoffs long, 1 of 8 overall. I mean, the offense was stagnant. The ball stopped moving. I mean, that viral clip of the Knicks moving the ball just around the court to everybody in Game 2 late where Mikal Bridges hit the three in the corner, and it's like just made his rounds. Everybody's like, this is beautiful basketball. Look how the Knicks are moving the ball. Oh, this is what you want to do offensively. They forgot all of it. All of it in Game 3. So if they don't get back to that, this series is going to be 2-2 going back to San Antonio. And it's going to be all the pressure on the Knicks, all the momentum on the Spurs. And that's why the desperation and the physicality combined in this series and in this game specifically is what's going to make it a perfect storm for really the game getting out of control if it's not locked down early by these officials. Like, that's going to be something that's massively important. Massively important. All right, we'll talk to Jake Hassan next. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Wes is trying to do math during the break, and it's bad. You're bad at math, Wes. Very bad.
It wasn't mathing.
You weren't mathing. You were not mathing at all, to say the least. Nats lost 11-10. I mean, just one of the ugliest, just worst losses you could have in any sport. I said at the beginning of the show, I don't even know if you'd believe it if AI wrote it. You'd be like, nah, dude, that's not a story that could actually happen. Game 4 of the NBA Finals tipping off in about 30 minutes. I say 30 minutes, but we all know it takes later. It'll be 8:35, and then they'll still be doing something at the beginning. And I also have to change the channel here. I got a stupid track and field. It was ESPN. Got to do a whole
same
thing.
Anyway.
Yeah, because ESPN had the coverage before, and now it moves to ABC, and I'm like, I got dumb track and field in front of me. I don't care about that, but I can't get up. Well, Jake Hassan can help at least, though. Maybe I can get up and change the channel while Jake's talking. Jake Hassan jumps on now. Hassan's Hacks on Substacks, the show and the U at Game Day Garage. He's going to be going to the College World Series in Omaha as well. Before we get to that, though, Jake, and now you're in Chicago, and we will get to the Bears and we'll get to the Bulls because there is some, you know, there's some interest there as well. Be nice with what happened with the Nats today. I have never seen, I can't think of the last time I've watched a team in any sport blow a lead the way that they did, at one point up 9-1 and then losing 11-10 on a walk-off grand slam to the Giants.
And Nick, you missed the lead here. Not only were they up 9-1, they were up 9-1 in the bottom of the eighth with an out.
That's like, true.
They were five outs away. Here's how bad that was. As somebody that whose recent betting strategy has been go against teams or go on teams that are trying to avoid the sweep, as the Giants were today, I'd given up. I'd walked down to the corner store down the street. I was going to get myself a little snack, and I get a text from one of my friends who also has been on this trend of teams avoiding the sweep, and so you be on them in that final game. And he just texts me all caps, "Oh my God." And then I have the notifications on Twitter for the MLB home run bot, and I just see Bryce Eldridge, grand slam. And I thought, surely not. And I open my MLB app, and surely yes.
Just absolutely brutal. I mean, listen, the Nats are certainly overachieving this year. I mean, you and I have talked about this before. There weren't many expectations coming into this season for the Nats. Like, where do you view them now in sort of the baseball hierarchy? I know we're not talking contender or anything like that, but how much in terms of, like, expectation level before the season versus where they are now are you at this point from what you've seen?
I think they've exceeded expectations. Like, they're plucky, and that's what way more than you could have expected with a new front office and all of the overturns going on there. And, well, who will they trade? Who won't they trade? And here you are. It's, you know, the first couple weeks of June, and they're plucky. They can win a couple games. Cade Cavalli is fun as hell. James Wood is awesome. C.J. Abrams is probably not much longer for this team, but still, he's at least been a contributor, and you know you could get some draft capital and some prospects back for him. So I think they're plucky in the scope of knowing what they were, and they've exceeded expectations given that, you know, those expectations were below the crust of the earth at season start.
What team has surprised you? Because a lot of people obviously are kind of maybe transitioning over to baseball now. Was there a team or two that you look at that's just been, let's put the Nats even aside, just outside of that, big surprise for you?
I mean, the easy answer is the White Sox. Obviously, a team just a couple seasons ago set the single season record for losses in a season. And now here they are with a chance to win the AL Central, and they've been awesome, and they've still been able to win games with their star rookie, Munetaka Murakami, on the injured list right now. So that is the easy answer. I would say, not to pat myself on the back, Nick, because I would never do that, and you know that about me. As somebody that had bet Will Venable at big numbers for manager of the year before the year and was on the White Sox win total over before the year, I personally would not say I'm surprised by the White Sox. But, I mean, even so, even with those bets in the can and with those numbers on my mind, I would still say I didn't expect them to be quite this good and have a real shot at the AL Central. So I guess the other answer would be the Rays, too. Because the Rays, everybody was talking about the Orioles and the Red Sox to chase the Yankees. And, of course, the Blue Jays coming off their World Series appearance. Everybody was writing off the Rays. And now here they are with also a shot at their division, fighting for the Yankees for supremacy in the AL East. So I think the Rays are the biggest shock to me. They're the team that, of course, they just do this. The Rays just roll out of bed. They win 90 games, and somehow they just pay like $14 an hour to all of their employees.
It's so true. It's like every year they're in the same spot, and it's like, what would they do if they actually had a budget? It would look a lot different. I always wish the Nats would have a budget like they used to at 1.20. Even when they were winning, there was still limits to what that budget looked like. The trade deadline, what are we looking at? About a month or so away at this point. What do you think this trade deadline is going to look like? And I want to stack on top of that, could you see the Nationals being a team that maybe actually buys at the deadline?
Buys for the Nationals seems like a stretch. They still have way more to sell. With C.J. Abrams, and I think even Jacob Young would have some interest for certain teams. Like, Jacob Young just screams Atlanta Brave to me, like fourth outfielder who's just going to hit a walk-off home run in, like, Game 5 of the World Series. Like, that just makes too much sense. Or, like, for the Rangers, too, that makes a lot of sense. But I think the Nationals are still, they have to be in sell mode. So that's just, the things haven't changed that much in Washington, unfortunately. I hate to tell you that and be the bearer of bad news. Saying isn't, don't shoot the messenger for no reason. Anyway, other teams that I think are going to be interesting, it's always the Braves. They've probably already made calls for Jorge Soler to bring him back. The Rangers, if they can keep this up and keep this turnaround going, they're a team that's always going to buy. I think it's interesting to see, though, what teams who had low expectations, like what do the White Sox do? Teams, and I just mentioned a bunch of teams we already talked about, but what do the White Sox do? Do they buy because they're ahead of schedule? They have an actual shot at the division. Who are the Yankees, teams like that, going to go for superstars? Who are even the superstars that are going to be available that are going to be on the trade block? So I still think there's a little bit of time for things to take some shape here, but I think right now the biggest question is going to be, what are the Tigers going to do with Tarik Skubal? The Tigers are dead in the water, and now if this new innovative surgery with Skubal's elbow and avoided major elbow surgery, and he's about to be on a rehab assignment, so the Tigers are going to sell. Where does he go? Like, where does Tarik Skubal end up ahead of his free agency? I hope it's not the Dodgers. It probably will be, but it's a team. What team is going to make the big swing for Tarik Skubal to bolster their pitching staff?
All right, talking to Jake Hassan here on The Fan. Hassan's hacks on Substack every day. You're going to get great baseball coverage there, including obviously fading the Nats. It just seems like that's what went with today. We're just going to move on from that, not think about it. The show in the U, wherever you get your podcast as well, with Game Day Garage. You're in Chicago. I've been talking about this actually a lot in terms of just from a football standpoint with the Bears. And you know, you were obviously out of your mind during the Bears portion of the draft, as we expected. But where you see the Bears right now, Jake? Look, the big thing obviously is, what is Caleb Williams going to look like in year three? I'm more concerned about the Madden curse for you guys, because I think, well, you know, it just comes for everybody, including even Saquon Barkley last year. What is just the feel right now for the Bears and the expectations heading into year two of Ben Johnson as head coach? Because here, I see the NFC, Jake, as a whole, as pretty wide open. It's like Rams and everybody else at this point to me.
Yeah, I think the Bears, I think the Madden curse and the expectation, because I'm a very jaded Bears fan. You know this about me, Nick. Yes. I always have my expectations low for them. That's the type of Bears fan I am. I try not to be meatball fan on the street. But I do think that things are changing even for jaded fans like me because of just how much confidence Ben Johnson exudes and how much confidence he gives us as a head coach. I mean, I remember this time last summer where we're all scratching our heads going, man, the Bears keep talking about the fundamentals in practice and how they're getting back to their roots in the fundamentals and how Caleb Williams has to line up different now before the snap. And people were starting to kind of pull on their shirt collar and go, ugh. But look how that went. And so I think that it's just Ben Johnson and his system and just the confidence that he gives us as fans. Now, am I saying they're going to go and win the division again and they're going to put the Packers in their place again? No, I think that regression has to be expected because they exceeded expectations so brazenly last season. So there probably is going to be a little bit of regression here. I would still expect double-digit wins, though. Like, give me 10 wins. Give me 10-7. I'll even take 11-6, and I'll be happy. Get back to the playoffs. Because for me, Nick, as a Bears fan and as somebody who's followed this team for 28 years of my life, all 28 of them, as it were, that it's just consistency. Don't give me the flash in the pan from 2018. Just give me a consistent product that's consistently going to be there. And I think they can do that. Obviously, the surprise retirement of Drew Dolman and the trade of DJ Moore impact things, especially for the offense, and the defense did have their issues last year, as we saw in that Rams game that ended the Bears season. But I do think that as long as you can just stack seasons, stack success, that's all you can ask for in Chicago for the Bears.
Well, listen, the one thing we can relate on in Chicago and D.C. is what it's like to at least have expectations for a guy, a quarterback, right? I mean, we both have two franchises that have been starved for quarterbacks for so long. So, like, yeah, I look at Caleb Williams and I see certainly things that need to be improved, especially that completion percentage. I mean, 58% last year is that's not going to work moving forward. But, you know, there's a chance that draft class as a whole between Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, at least in that top three, like, Jake, they could all have just great careers. We're looking at that going, that's the greatest quarterback class that we've ever seen in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue that right now. I mean, with Drake May going to the Super Bowl and Caleb Williams on Madden, it's kind of weird to say now because a year ago we would have said, well, Caleb Williams was the lame duck. But now here we are saying out of the three, Jaden Daniels is third, question mark. So it's just kind of weird how fast things change here with young quarterbacks. But that's also the nature of young quarterbacks. Things are going to be very fluid year over year with those guys, and they're all always going to be compared to each other.
Talking to Jake Hassan here on The Fan, Wizards and Bulls also, we have that also in common. Yeah. Wizards, the number one overall pick. Bulls, the number four overall pick in the draft. I know it's a little different for you guys because you wanted the number one overall pick, but listen, it's still a good spot to be in. Bulls don't have a coach. I don't know. The thing with the Chicago Bulls for so long for me is like there's this obviously incredibly storied franchise that's been there, and yet they've been sitting in this NBA purgatory what feels like ever since Jordan retired at this point. Is there Bulls fatigue in Chicago? Is there a new feeling of, like, higher expectations and happiness towards this team? Because it just feels like there has been no juice around this franchise for a long time.
Honestly, I think the Bulls are probably fifth in the pecking order in Chicago franchises right now. Like, everybody's very excited about the Bears, obviously. The White Sox have popped and are very exciting, and even Cubs fans are talking about the White Sox because of the hatred. Everybody, even the Cubs fans, hate the Cubs right now just because of how poorly they've played and the way things have fallen apart there. And I would say even the Blackhawks are ahead of the Bulls right now because at least the Blackhawks have taken a step forward and they have the young star with Connor Bedard. I think there's an apathy for the Bulls because even with the fourth overall pick, it's okay, well, look at the last time he had the fourth overall pick. Hello, Patrick Williams. Like, I just think there's an apathy with this Bulls team right now because you don't have the true star. You don't have the face of the franchise. Like, Bouzelis is awesome and he can dunk and that's cool and that's fun, but Noah Sengu, your first round pick from last year, didn't even play this year. Dalen Terry, your first round pick from a couple of years ago, he's basically a zero. So, and now you don't have a coach, as you said, Nick. So I think there's just an apathy for the Bulls, and people are just kind of thinking, all right, we'll believe it when we see it.
All right, so you are heading to Omaha for the College World Series with Game Day Garage. Oh, yeah. I honestly can't wait to see the coverage of that with you because I know that you're going to be slightly unhinged at times, and it's going to be far more than just what's going on with the games. What's the biggest thing you're looking forward to that? Because, you know, a lot of people have never had that experience going to the College World Series in Omaha, yet it's like it is a massive, massive event, a cult following.
Yeah, it's great. And I'm so happy to see people start to tune into the College World Series. A bunch of those super regional games last weekend, over a million viewers on ESPN across platforms. So that's really awesome to see how this sport has grown and see people pay attention to it. I mean, we got Pat McAfee and his crew going to the West Virginia game on Friday. Like, that's the type of exposure college baseball is finally getting. And it's really awesome because this sport has deserved it for a long time. To answer your question, Nick, of what I'm looking forward to the most, I hope a Texas win, as somebody who has tickets on them from before the year at 16 and 20 to 1. I hope I'm looking forward to Texas wins mostly, but I'm just looking forward to the atmosphere. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a huge party. College baseball fans are absolutely insane people. You know, you've known me for a couple of years, Nick. You know, I'm an insane person too. I'll admit that. I'll cop to that. It's going to be a great time. And mostly I'm looking forward to carrying around PJ Glasser and a baby born all tailgate season.
Maybe a few Jello shots, right?
Yeah, of course. Come on.
All right. Hassan's Hacks on Substack, the show in the U, wherever you get your podcasts. Check out all of the Game Day Garage coverage in Omaha, what it's like to be at the College World Series, player interviews, behind the scenes, tons of great stuff from Jake there. Jake, Hassan, great. Be nice to my Nats, but other than that, it was good to talk to you, buddy.
Hey, always a pleasure. I only laughed at them a little bit.
That's fine. That's fine. Well, we all kind of did. They even shortened the post-game show. They were like, we're done very quickly. So that happened. Good to talk to you, Jake. I'll see you.
Anytime.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's when you're up 9-1 that late in the game, five outs to go, I mean, it's just, it's brutal. It's brutal. And I just...
10 runs in two innings.
Wes, you and I were texting each other because I'm at the home studio. You're in the control room because... Well, that's just the convenience that I was lucky enough to have. We thought, yeah. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, this game's... I texted you. I said, this game's over. I think at that point it was 9-2.
Oh, I screenshot it. I'm going to post it up on Instagram.
That's fine. Do it.
Don't listen to this guy.
Do it. Hey, do it and tag me. It's like what was it? UVA Sharpie, which was iconic at this point. I had Nats Sharpie, essentially, in that, and I was completely wrong. So feel free to call me out on that. I may have jinxed the Nats.
I got it. I got it. I said... We might be on later, depending on the Nats game.
Yep.
You said, it's 9-2. This blank is over, LOL.
Yep. Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. I did. So it's my fault. Blame me. Although I will say my brother texted me. He lives in the Bay Area, outside of San Francisco, though. And he texted me and he goes, the Nats are killing the Giants right now, and all my coworkers are losing their mind. And I was like, yeah, man, it's an ass-whooping. And so it's me. I'm the problem.
Yep.
I'll admit it. I'm the problem today. I apologize in advance. Well, it wouldn't be advanced. I apologize after. I'm used to apologizing in
the
advance.
The Nats bullpen should apologize as well.
Yeah, that's true. Let's blame it on the Nats bullpen. I think that's the better way to do it.
They didn't even get an out in the 9th inning.
It was nothing. I mean, it was just, I couldn't believe it. I sat there and I was like, just don't give up a grand slam. Just don't give up a, oh my God. That is a loss you got to put behind yourself very, very quickly. Nick Ash, you on the Fan. Oh, we're getting close to tip-off of Game 4 of the NBA Finals. That's that type of energy we need. I'll tell you what, that is a song right there that you were going to hear at sporting events for like the next 100 years.
Hey, just go to a South Carolina football game.
Yeah. I mean, it is iconic, it is timeless, and it spans across generations. Kids that are 3 years old are going to be jumping up and down at robot football events when all these tech companies just start their own robot football league. So last night... Metal Chris and I, Wes, came up with an idea where it was like, because I was like, you know, back in the day, the original XFL never really, like, it didn't take off, but I think it was too early in, like, the social media. We didn't have social media then, so, like, it didn't really.
The XFL before my time?
Like, the real original XFL,
where there's legit cheerleaders.
Yes.
Like, that XFL.
Okay. And it was, like, gimmicky and kind of over the top.
They do bits.
I feel like you could start that again, but now I've added another layer to this. Because I've always said we're going to have we need some sort of robot football league down the road. You see how these robots are. There's a robot dancing outside of Madison Square Garden with Knicks fans. Like, these robots are everywhere. In not too long from now time, whatever that time looks like, we're just going to need to get all these big tech guys, Bezos and Sam Altman and everybody else. Let's put them all together. Zuckerberg will be in there and, you know, Elon Musk. And They need to just start a robot football league. We don't have to worry about concussions. We don't have to worry about protecting the quarterback. I want to see robots taking each other's heads off. And it's not a tackle unless their head pops off like it's Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Give me that. That's the only thing that will truly compete with the NFL. Not even the NBA. And the NBA ratings have been through the roof, but it still doesn't come close to what, you know, the Super Bowl or playoff games are in the NFL. Robot football, where real robots are getting their heads popped off. I think that right there with kind of a WWE feel to it too, yeah, it's gimmicky. That's the whole point. I think that would be a monster idea. Are you in on this?
Yeah, I'll invest.
Okay.
I'll invest all my radio money.
I like
I'm
this.
In.
This is good.
I'm all
this
in.
This is good. I like the attitude. I like everything.
Hey,
here,
you know, I cover the UFL, and I enjoy it.
Yes.
So why not we add another football league?
Well, the difference is the UFL is real football, you know, and I think it's a great path for players to get to the NFL. Like, here's the thing. I've always said this. The NFL needs some sort of development league, and I don't know what that would look like. That's a longer process to figure out. I get it. There's logistics, and, well, I'll put it in quotes, player safety and pretend the NFL cares and all that. But, you know, there needs to be something. The UFL is the closest thing to that, and they've done a really good job of building it up. And not just the DC Defenders and, you know, the culture that's around that team, which is, I mean, it's great. But I would love to see the NFL have, like, a real honestly, here's the shift. The UFL becomes a true minor league system for the NFL, and then the XFL, the real XFL, the original robot XFL, can be our spring football that we get. That's what I want to see. We've worked this out right now.
Okay, so you're going to buy the rights to the XFL first?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, well, yeah. We don't have to call it the XFL. We can call it the RFL, the Robot Football League.
All right,
you don't have to worry about any licensing.
But I do agree. I think the UFL is a great product. We've seen several kickers in the league.
Yes.
And the NFL come from USFL and, you know, the UFL combined XFL.
Yeah.
It's a great product. The championship game is this week with DC in it and having a chance to go back to back. They'll play Louisville on Saturday at 3 p.m. on ABC. ABC, Louisville's a good team. They lost to them twice mm-hmm. this season, but they have a chance to, you know, beat them one time this year in the championship and where it means more.
I'm just glad that it survived because I guess it's one of those leagues that's had these, you know, I mean, it's had all these different forms. And once The Rock took over with his business partners, it's, you know, and I forget who his other business partner is. It's
his ex-wife and then Mike Rapoli.
Right. That's who it is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to interview him opening week.
The Rock?
The Defenders. Not The Rock, Mike Rapoli.
Okay.
Yeah, he was at the Defenders opening game against Houston. Great guy. They've invested a lot of money and time in this, and it's working out. They average 600,000 views per game.
Yeah, those are big numbers, man. Those are good.
Hockey's the obviously spans throughout the majority of the year, but they get 500. So it's good that the UFL, mm-hmm. they get 10 to 12 weeks, and they're averaging 600. In the playoffs, they average more. So it's going up for sure.
And it's working. You know, it's not a league that's over the top and stretched out too long. It's like you have a good start. You have a good finish. The season's compressed in the right amount of time. Like, that's the one thing. You're not going to shorten any leagues in any sport. Like, people are like, well, the NBA should be less than 82 games. Okay, good luck. Baseball should be less than 162. It ain't happening. You're not going to have fewer games. The NFL's going to 18 games. They're only going to add more. It's more, more, more. I think the UFL is in, like, kind of a right spot right there at this point.
Yeah, they're going to be expanding to Oklahoma City in 2027, and they're thinking of 2035, they'll get to 16 cities. So it's on the come up.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. Listen,
buy
sports
in now.
Sports in general. Yeah, right. This is the time. Buy before it continues to spike. The stock is only going up at this point. I mean, look, football works in this country. And look, you know, sports in general have gotten to the point now where it's just there's more access to it. There's more of the ability for people to watch on a lot of different platforms. There's more access to athletes and the media coverage and all of that there. I mean, the NBA, look, every sport's a little different, right? The NFL, it's still, the NFL is just king because of the sport, the game, I think what makes the NFL so great, but they're starting to hurt it a little bit, is they're getting to a point where, you know, you're going to watch these games and you're going to have them once a week. And you know that, like, your team plays once a week and there's an event and it's leading up to it and all these things are there. But, you know, you're starting to add more games during the week. It doesn't help the situation. But that's the NFL and that's its model and that's what works. The NBA is star-driven. And Now, one thing about the NBA is they're in a great spot now because you got Victor Wembanyama in the NBA Finals. As this game's going to tip off in a few minutes, he's likely going to be the face of the league moving forward. Now, can there be other players that are in the conversation? Sure. We'll see over the next couple of seasons, three or four even, and really where it goes. Because if you go back and look at, you know, where the league was post-Jordan, pre-LeBron, that 98 to 2003 stretch, it was, is it Tim Duncan? Is it Kobe? Is it Shaq? You know, who is the face of the league and who's the team? And then the Lakers won a bunch of titles, so they were in there. The Spurs were in there. So, like, you had these teams, but you didn't have one true, I hate to say it's the king, until you had LeBron, and then we knew, like, okay, this is going to be the guy. He's the one true king. But now it's looking like Wemby at this point. And he's kind of made himself the villain a little bit, too.
Dude, if they come back from down 0-2,
yeah,
there's a new king in town.
It will add to the legacy. And see,
or
that's the
queen.
Thing, too. Well, it's the king. It's the WNBA is different, so we'll have to go to a different sport for that. Look, I mean, if the Spurs come back from down 2-0 and losing the first two games at home and all that, like, yes, that's going to add to Victor Wembanyama's legacy. He's also making himself a little bit of a villain with this, the way that things have gone, too. And I think that that's going to be something to keep an eye on, not just in this series, but moving forward and how, you know, he's treated around the league, because players are going to start to see, okay, he's getting a little more confident, he's getting a little more physical, he's a skinny guy, we're going to try to push him around a little bit. That's going to go beyond, obviously, tonight, though, as this game gets set to tip off in a few minutes. All right, NBA Finals Game 4 tip-off coming up next. Nick Ashew on The Fan. Nick Ashew on The Fan. We got the starting lineups going on now. Showing the Spurs. Bet there's a lot of booze. I don't have the sound on because it'd be distracting. Game 4 of the NBA Finals. Over 1.5 fights is where I've gone. Wes has gone under at 1. Now again, NBA fights. Not like, you know, real fights. Not hockey fights. Do you know that Ben Stiller is doing a documentary for this? And all from his iPhone? That's why he's been filming all this stuff?
Is that why he's getting there 4 hours early?
Yeah. Yeah, he's filming for a documentary. He's doing it all on his iPhone. This is like the new trend now. I filmed it all on my iPhone. Eh. You see this a lot, though, and then it's like, they filmed this whole movie on their iPhone, and then they've all got, like, huge cameras and lenses and all these attachments. I'm like, did you really film it on your iPhone, or was it just collecting some of the data from this? Yeah, but
I'm trying to be the Blair Witch Project.
Right. Listen, the technology's gotten a lot better than where we were back in the day with that, but, you know, I have seen some of the clips. You know, and it looks very filmy, if that's the word, but you can put it in cinematic mode and put a couple of filters on it, you know. And that's the world we live in now. Anybody has a chance to do it, but let's not pretend that Ben Stiller doesn't have an eye with the film background that he has. He'll probably make this pretty good, so we'll see what it looks like. But that's why he's been doing it. You see him everywhere, and it's like, all right, what is he doing? Yeah, I've seen clips of him. He's walking around like 4 hours before, and they're just letting him do it. And look, ride the wave. Everybody should ride the wave if you're... you want to get any Knicks coverage. Here we go. It's going to start. Now they got the Knicks starting line. It's the one thing. That's why it's like, oh, yeah, it starts at 8:30. No, it doesn't. It's 8:40. What?
Like, I can play that. Here, watch this.
You got the starting lineups going in my head? Is that what you're going to do? We're over the air?
Oh, it won't do it.
What?
Oh, I thought I was going to play it.
Play what, Wes?
The starting lineups.
Oh, well, do it or do it. If not, it's not.
Hey, I'm pressing the on button.
So it's not working. So you gave me a promise that you couldn't fulfill.
I'm going to try to figure this out. Hold on.
Come on, man. I mean, listen, I can't just like be silent and see if you're going to do it. You're going to either have to put it on or not. I'll tell you what, though. Just in general, I feel like any NBA fan, you just love the starting lineups. There's just something about it. There's like, it's like a classic thing. I don't know why I understand when you have some of these regular season games and there's like back-to-backs and it's, you know, you don't have time for the coverage. But let's always show starting lineups before at least playoff games. Thank God NBC came back and was like, remember when we did that a lot and everybody loved it? Let's do it again. And now ESPN's like, oh, we should do it too. Yeah, I know they did a little bit. But like, it's just starting lineups for these big games, there's a juice. There's an energy to it. You got to have it. And they're doing it. Wes doesn't have it. He's made a promise that he can't fulfill.
Dude, I'm telling you, this button doesn't work. I just found
it probably doesn't. I think we'll just go with that at this point. It probably doesn't work. All right, you got Mike Brown staring off and thinking about how those refs are either going to love him or hate him for calling him out. Let's see. I'm telling you, watch the first 5 minutes or so of this first quarter. That's going to be so interesting to me, is to see what it looks like and see how this game is called. You've got to call a tight game early. Like, I understand that games are played differently. This humidity. Nick Ashew on the Fan, early 5-2 lead for the Spurs. It was 5-4 and it went back to 5-2. So here's the one thing I have to kind of figure out with my home setup. Is like, I got two monitors in front of me. I got like the camera set up in between the two monitors, which is important, you know. And then above that is where I've got the TV, Wes. And it's like I'm kind of looking through objects and like monitors and like bars and equipment. So I need to kind of figure out a better situation for this. I could have just done the whole thing from the garage set for Game Day Garage, but you know that's tough. We don't need anything else dropping off the air, like what just happened a minute ago.
How's the chair?
My chair's comfortable.
Okay,
but it's like a desk chair, you know, like a the kind of desk chairs you'd have. It's lumbar support, ergonomic, if you will, but not like that weird one that's in the main studio there that Cake sits in. That's just the worst thing on earth. He loves it. And it's like you sit straight up and it's like a gamer chair, but it's just unbearable to sit in. And it's low to the ground and I don't know how he sits in it. And Grant doesn't sit in it. Does JP sit in it? Because every time I'm in there, I'm like, how do you guys sit in this thing? But I'll tell you this, chairs just get overlooked. You sit for hours on end doing this, and then the chairs are terrible. The downstairs studio at the now completely dead Betting Network, I brought my own chair in because they wouldn't get us good chairs. And I said, guys, I'm bringing my own chair in. This is insane. Can we get good chairs? Nobody ever got good chairs.
Does Cake sit in the red one?
Yeah, he sits in the red one with like the, it's like a gamer chair.
Oh, yeah, that's
the,
you know, straight up.
It's straight up. Like you're sitting against a wall. It's like doing wall squats for 4 hours. It's the worst thing on earth. I don't know how anybody sits in that chair, but he does. Chairs are important, man. They are. Now you're making my back feel like it's hurting, and I should be comfortable right now. It's hard, though, no matter what. You shouldn't be sitting for long periods of time anyway. You should be standing up. I'd actually like to do like a stand-up desk, do a show with a stand-up desk. That would be good. I'd probably have even more energy then. I'd be all ready to go. For the love of God, we're in a
break
again.
You could do jumping jacks.
I'd do some jumping jacks, you know, just live on the air, you know. Let's do some jumping jacks right now. Hey, do you think anybody's going to try to fight Wemby tonight? Because he is... I'm telling you, like, he is starting to add that villain category to his resume here now. Now, don't get me wrong, incredibly talented player, hard worker, like, checks all the boxes for best player in the league, face in the league. Like, we're going to get to that point. But, man, he's slowly getting himself into that category of easy to hate when he's on the court. Like, we're starting to see at least a little bit of that. Now, I know he's a hero in San Antonio, but I'd be curious to see if we have a similar game four to we did in game three. How do fans outside of San Antonio, not Knicks fans, like neutral fans in this, how they start to feel about Victor Wembanyama? In fact, you're not a fan of either one of these teams. Where are you? Do you see Wemby?
Oh, me?
Where do you see it?
Like Wemby or just...
Wemby. Like, do you feel like there's a little bit of a villain streak in him?
In a way. I think that play that he just fouled... They called a foul on that play, right? Against Cat?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because that was a foul.
Yeah.
Just making sure.
I'm telling you, they got to call it tighter this time.
The thing is, when you're as good as he is, you're going to have a cocky confidence type of persona.
Right.
You know, you're better than 99% of the league, and they're going to try to beat you. And I don't know, you got to kind of have this condescending attitude.
I think there's condescending, and then there's...
Who would be a condescending player, I guess?
It would go beyond that, though, with him. I think it's just because, like, the way he threw Jalen Brunson down, yeah, and I'm seeing... I mean, this foul right now, I'm watching the replay of it with Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, he just reached in. It's a foul. It's a normal, you know... There's nothing wrong with that.
What are they doing?
I don't know. He's got his arms tangled up with Karl Anthony Towns, and he's also got ridiculously long arms. So there's a certain point where, like, he's just going to get in the way. Are they checking a replay on this?
No, they're actually challenging it.
Oh, they
call overturn. It wasn't a foul. I'm actually shocked.
Oh boy.
He kind of, he hit him in the head when he went up.
Oh my gosh.
It starts again.
I'm telling you what.
And there it is. Nice bucket.
Ref, you suck is going to get chanted a lot in this game. A lot.
I think Draymond Green is a good example of being condescending. I just don't like his cockiness.
Right.
Because he's not good. I mean, he is good, but he's not great.
Well, here's the thing about Draymond. Draymond is trying to be more of the villain than he is. It's like his whole thing with Charles Barkley was just such a bad look, where it was like he was trying to be that guy and he wasn't, you know, when he was on with on Inside the NBA. It's like Draymond's just not at that level. But here's the thing I'll say about Draymond Green. And he was on the pregame show, wasn't he, with them?
Yes, he was.
Was he there again? Okay.
And so it was with Ben Stiller and a tennis player. Is he there every day?
He's been on it in the finals.
Okay.
And they're definitely trying to incorporate him. So when he retires, they're going to probably add him. Because here's the thing. This show is going to look very different. Like, inside the NBA, that whole thing is going to be very different. I don't know how much longer Charles Barkley is going to do it, to be honest with you.
So I think it's towards the end here.
Yeah, I think that becomes something where, you know, you eventually get to the point where, you know, they're adding Draymond Green. It's clear they kind of want him to be a part of it. So,
which has a good personality for TV,
right? He fits, but you can't manufacture it, right? Like what's made that show great for so long is that, you know, it's they have chemistry. They have fun on that show. Everybody gets along, but they still mess with each other. And it's like it's going to be hard to start helicoptering in other personalities and expect it to be different or expect it to be the same. And I don't think that's going to get to the case here. So
tough pass by Hart here.
Yeah, this is a rough start for the Knicks. This is not good. If they blow a 2-0 series lead and lose this, it's just going to be.
Suns in four.
I mean, this has that kind of feel right now. This is not a good start. And the one thing that I'll say about these finals games so far is no lead is safe. So don't look at this and think like, okay, that's going to be.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You know, games that the Knicks are playing in, no lead is safe.
Yeah, you're right. Like, in general, that's been the case. So, you know, I think you can look at this early on and say, oh, my God, bad start. But we've seen this before. So it's not. You're not in a situation here where this is going to be completely done. I am about to scream, by the way, at YouTube TV, which is not working for me.
Why?
Here for me.
Oh, it's glitching.
I'm trying to bring it up on another screen next to me and streaming on one of my screens here versus the TV in front of me, and it just keeps going back to like the pregame show, and it's been distracting, and it's just doing everything wrong.
Right now,
now I'm synced up. I'm finally synced up.
Okay.
This has been an issue.
There you go.
Yeah, now I'm good. I'm seeing a Modelo commercial, so that's where I am.
It makes me feel like you're at kind of a Glory Days Buffalo Wild Wings. Oh, I got three over TVs over here. Got a Jumbotron behind me.
I know. Well, I think about it now. And this is why, too, like, you've got to make it, you know, we're talking about new stadiums and whether, you know, the Bears are moving to Indiana, which I forgot to ask Jake Hassan about that, too, is how people in Chicago feel about them moving. Because it's like, right, you see a lot of stadiums in a lot of different places outside of these cities now, but you want to make it an event. You got to find the space for the event. You got to find the funding for the event, the event space for these stadiums, because you can do what I'm doing right now, watching these games on multiple screens right in your house, and you're sitting there. It's like people are comfortable doing that, and it's a lot cheaper to park at home. The food and the beer or whatever. Like, it's, you know, we have more of these options here now. I will say that I feel like this game has had no rhythm. There's been a lot of stoppage and it's been a lot of commercials. And it's frustrating me right now. I'm going to be honest with you. This is not a good start for the Knicks. And quite frankly, it's been a start that's just, it's what I expected, though. You know, Spurs coming out early, Knicks looking a bit choppy, refs trying to make some calls early. We got a long, long way for this to go, though, here. The NBA has made it very clear that they want this to go as long as possible. And listen, any sports fan, any NBA fan that's not emotionally tied to either one of these teams would love to see a 7-game series here, right? Like, it's just, We had a game seven in the NBA Finals last year, which was the Thunder and the Pacers, and like nobody was excited about it until game seven, and it had great ratings because game seven. So in this situation here, if you're the NBA, to take this series with the number one media market and all these celebrities and all of the just storylines around the Knicks and then the Spurs and Victor Wembanyama and that storied franchise and the way they clearly hate each other now, everything there, you want to suck all the juice out of this you can if you're the NBA. And if you look at how this started, you definitely had some officials that were there that were trying to, you know, that series was obviously, I mean, it was 2-0 coming back to New York, but you had, you know, when you're looking at lead officials that have, when the Spurs have a great record when they're officiating games and things like that, you watch and go, I'm not one of those guys that necessarily wants to put tinfoil on my head, but it is very clear that, you know, the NBA thinks about this type of stuff. And I think this is what people overlook sometimes. It's not changing the actual game that they want to do, but it doesn't mean that they don't want to find little ways that might help these series get stretched out. It's still entertainment first. I'm not saying the games are fixed. I wouldn't say that. But I would say that if there is a maybe an advantage, like, hey, the Spurs are really good when this guy's the lead official, let's make sure that's what the crew looks like in game two. All right, we're finally back here. For the love of God, 12-2 with 9-10 to go. That's where I am. You're probably ahead of me, Wes, so that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, we got 8:55 here. Another commercial break.
Yeah, I'm streaming, so you know we've got a 30-second delay or so, give or take. I think I have the option where it should be caught up, but I got to double check on this account.
Oh, you said 9-10 in the first?
I'm at 8:55 now.
Oh, okay. We're in the second quarter.
Okay, you're the worst. I can't do this. The math isn't mathing. You're not getting starting lineups up on the air for me.
I tried.
You know, I know you tried, and I think you broke everything secretly.
Probably.
You broke literally everything.
Everything's right. For game three.
OG Anunoby knocks down a three. It's 12-5 now. The Knicks need to get on the board. By the way, why also did the NBA not have the Larry O'Brien trophy on the court for as long as they did? I mean, what were they thinking? That is such an iconic look. And I get it because everybody last year was like, the court looks boring. And then they were like, oh, we should put the finals logo on the court and let's get the Larry O'Brien trophy back. Like, make it look big. You got these ugly-ass courts for the NBA Cup, but you're not doing it for the NBA Finals? Like, give these courts a little bit more out of it. It's 14-5 now. Spurs up on the Knicks. 8:26 to go in the first quarter. Nick Ashew on the Fan.